Last time I talked, I just used one word, didn't I? Grieving. And this time I've got another one word, and it's performance. And when I thought about it, I thought, what is a performer? What if we perform, what do? We act. We're in a show, aren't we? We put on something to be seen by others. And sometimes we can do this in our everyday life. We perform. I just wanted you to think about, if you were at home praying and you were asking God, what is it you want me to do? And you really felt that he put a project on your heart. And after that, you know, you asked for some signs, and they worked out the way that you'd asked for them to work out. And you really felt that God wanted you to do this thing. What would you do about it? If it was me, I would plan, because that is the way I am. I'm a planner, and there's nothing wrong with that, because actually Jesus commends it in the parable with the man with the tower. I don't know what you'd do, but it reminded me of somebody in the Old Testament, Gideon. He was out threshing the wine press or whatever, hiding away actually from the enemies of Israel, the Midianites. And actually he wasn't praying at that time. He was minding his own business. And this angel stroke man, at the beginning I think he didn't really know whether it was an angel or a man, says, sort of, hi, man of, I've got the message here, mighty warrior, it says in this one. And Gideon replies, me? You talking about me? Do you remember that drama that Phil and Vel did? Me? Are you sure you're talking about me, mighty warrior? You know, it says in here, the runt of the litter. I'm not important, and I don't come from an important tribe or an important family. Are you talking to me? And the angel said, God's chosen you to be the leader, the one that's going to come against your enemies. And he says, oh, hang on a minute. How about a sign? This is the first time. And he says, actually, it would have taken longer than a minute, because he goes and prepares a goat and some bread and comes back to this man stroke angel. And the person says, well, put the goat and the bread that you've got on the rock. And then the person takes a stick and whoosh, fire comes down and burns up the offering, and the person, angel, disappears. Pretty dramatic. And he realizes that God has actually spoken to him. So later on, when God says to him, what I want you to do is I want you to take one of your father's bulls. I want you to knock down the pillar to Baal. I want you to cut down the other pillar to the female goddess and chop it up for wood and make an altar to God and put that pillar on and sacrifice that bull to God. So he's had, you know, God sort of let him know that he's to do this, but he still does it at night. At night he does it, and he does that. The next day, of course, everybody says, who did it? And actually his dad sticks up for him. And he says, well, you know, if Baal's got anything against my son, well, let Baal sort it out. And Gideon realizes then that he is the leader that God has chosen. So he goes around and blows his trumpet, because all the Midianites get together to have a battle against the Israelites. So he blows his trumpet and he gets all these people to come and join with him to help defeat the Midianites, and he gets 22,000 men. Great. When God's given you something to do, don't you want a lot of resources to do with it? It makes you feel really good. But Gideon, you know, Gideon still wanted confirmation. You know the bit about the fleece. If you've not been brought up to know the Bible stories, some people say, I'm putting out a fleece. It means they're not sure. They're asking God, are you sure? So he says, are you sure? If it is right, Lord, make the fleece wet and the ground dry. God does it. So he said, can you do it the other way, just to make really, really sure? So this time he asks for the fleece to be wet, or the other way, dry and the ground wet. And God does it. And then God does something really, I thought first of all unkind, but actually it's kindness of God. He gets Gideon, he says, when he brings all these men, he says, you have got too many resources. You've got too many men, Gideon. So send all those away at home that don't really want to be here. So I think 12,000 or something, go home. 12,000 go home. Oh, my resources are going down. Not really sure about that. And then God says, you've got too many. And, you know, he tells them to lap at the, take the water from the river. And God dwindles it down to 300 from 22,000. And I thought, how would I feel if God had given me a job to do? I gathered together all those resources and then God had dwindled them down to that. I feel vulnerable, very vulnerable. And I wouldn't like it. Because I'd have to trust in God then, wouldn't I? I'd have to trust in God. And sometimes we say that we trust in God. We want to trust in God, but we'd like a few resources as well of our own, just in case. We wouldn't say this because it's terrible to say this, just in case God didn't come through for us. We'd want to say, wash your mouth out. You know God's going to come through for you. But our behaviour betrays what's actually inside us, because we don't feel very comfortable if he takes away our security, our backup, and we're vulnerable. And I thought that's when we know, don't we, whether we really trust God, when he takes those resources away and he leaves us vulnerable. We don't want to be stripped away like that. Sometimes we perform because we feel vulnerable. You know, we go to somewhere and see a lot of people and they say, how are you? And we say, we're fine. And we might even sort of joke and chat to everybody. And then actually go home and actually cry because we feel lonely. We didn't want to tell anybody that's how we were feeling. Because we don't like feeling vulnerable. So we can put on a show and say it's okay. And it's not okay. But we don't want to be vulnerable. We don't want to have to trust other people. Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah, I think I've turned over. That makes a bit more sense. Yeah, actually, I've got a bit from my last sermon here. Do you remember what I said? I'm going to remind you if you didn't. If we feel like that, and we feel actually lonely, and people ask us, and we don't want to say, what should we do? You know, when we've got emotions that we don't know what to do with, and we want to pretend they're not there. We want to suppress them, or as I do, repress them, so that I don't even know I've got them. I squash it on them so quickly they've gone before you've seen them. And remember I said we should confess our feelings before God. Maybe before others, it depends on the situation. And just give ourselves time to think about them. And then remember God's faithfulness. And ask him for help. Help, Lord. I'm feeling lonely and I'm feeling vulnerable. And actually, there are reasons why I feel like that. But you actually are good. You do actually love me. Help me feel that love. That's what we should be doing. But we often don't do that. I was thinking, too, that, you know, in Genesis, the first chapter of Genesis, when God creates the world, and it says he did so and so and so and so, and behold, it was good. After every day, it was good. And after the sixth day, he says, actually, it was very good. But, you know, in Genesis 2, somewhere it says, it was not good. And it was not good even before Adam sinned. There's a bit where it says it wasn't good. Even before God sinned. Adam sinned, not God. Adam sinned. And that's a bit where God says it is not good that Adam should be alone. It's not good. And at that point, Adam had a perfect relationship with God. Sometimes we say everybody's got a God-shaped hole inside them. That even though they don't know it, deep down everybody wants to relate to something greater than themselves. And we say, well, you've got a God-shaped hole. But actually, we've got a person-shaped hole as well. And we need to relate to others. That's the way God made us. He says it's not good for man to be alone. He's made us to relate to one another. So we should be relating to one another and talking with one another, and not sort of going away and saying, I don't need anybody. So I don't perform because I don't need anybody. You know, I'm sufficient unto myself, because God says, no, it's not good for you to be alone. You should be relating to others. But sometimes we want to relate so that we're seen. We need to be seen. You know, we want people to notice us. I mean, that's normal. That's all right. But sometimes we can become overbalanced in that, and we just start to do things to be seen. We want, you know, if we're spiritual, we want a ministry to be seen doing these things. I was brought up actually in the Methodist tradition, and they have a brilliant service. The first Sunday of each year, they have what they call a covenant service. And there you're sort of getting yourself right. At the beginning of the year, Pauline's nodding. And as a child, I used to listen to this every year, and it used to say something like, put me wherever you will. And yeah, that's right. You use me, God. But it also says something like, or put me aside, or don't use me, if that's what you want. But that's not what I want. We don't like being put aside. And I was thinking about this and thinking about Jesus and thinking, he was obscure for a lot of the years of his life. We hear about him at 12 when he was a sort of man in the Jewish tradition and taken to Jerusalem. And we hear about him then. We don't hear about him for 18 years. That's an awful long time, isn't it? He'd already come to an understanding at 12 that he had to be about his father's business. He knew what his ministry was to be. But God left him, as it were, obscure. I mean, no doubt he was a good son, a good carpenter, a good neighbour. But he wasn't launched out into ministry. And I remember when I first thought about that, that was terribly challenging to me. 18 years in obscurity before he was launched out. And we don't often like that, do we, to not be noticed. But Jesus knew what it was like to be like that. So, you get me... thoughts around. So sometimes we've got to be content with not performing and just being a good neighbour, a good housewife, a good whatever. Jesus commended Mary for just sitting and being at his feet. I'm not actually doing the things that needed doing around, just being. Jesus said to her, you've chosen the better part. Not that we have to do that all the time, but there is a time when we are like we were saying, be still and know that I'm God. Because there's a place for just being. But it isn't enough just to be. I mean, I'm a classic at wanting to withdraw. I'm very good at that. If the situation seems a bit threatening to me, my fallback position is withdraw. But God does want us to spend time with him, in a relationship with him. Because I was thinking of the bit where the people come to Jesus, or Jesus says they'll come to him and say, Lord, we did this in your name. We cast out demons in your name. We healed the sick in your name. Or we prophesied in your name. And he says, I didn't know you. You weren't doing it in my name. I didn't tell you to do it. You don't even know me. You haven't spent time finding out what I wanted you to do. You just did it because you thought it was a good thing to do. But it wasn't what I asked you to do. You didn't know me. That's such a harsh word, isn't it? Because we can do good things because we think they're good things. And it may be not what God wants us to do at all. I mean, I was saying, you know, the classic thing when somebody wants money and you think, well, it's good to help them. And actually, God doesn't want you to do that at all because they would misuse that money. There's lots of different scenarios around that, but sometimes we can get in the way of God by doing what we think is good. And it's not what he wants us to do. I was thinking about this, and you might think this is a bit more obscure, but I was thinking, say if I went home today and did some baking this afternoon, which I do sometimes on a Sunday afternoon, and I just thought I'll make some extra and I'll take some round for somebody and bless somebody with this, okay? Now, you think, well, it must be a good idea to go and bless somebody with a cake. Well, it might be. But I'm just thinking, now, just say I'd gone to church not feeling very well. I'd been a bit miserable. Nobody had asked me. Well, they might have asked me, but I said, oh, I'm fine. And they'd just gone. And I'm walking home and thinking, wasn't very good at church today. It wasn't very good. I didn't really like, nobody's interested in me. And I was turning those thoughts over in my mind for an hour or two before I got on to baking. Okay? Then when I got to baking, I thought, I'll make a cake for somebody else. Then the thought came in. Remember, I've been thinking negative thoughts. Oh, I'll bake a cake for Pat. Then I'll take it to her. Then, and I'm not even perhaps thinking this consciously, she'll give me a bit of attention. She'll spend time with me. Okay? Now, did that thought of blessing somebody, I thought of it as blessing someone with a cake. Did it really come from God, that thought? Or was it coming from me? So, I mean, because I'd been thinking all that time before I'd been baking it, poor me, nobody's interested in me. The thought of baking the cake and giving it to somebody who might give me some time was my thought. You know, because I wasn't doing it really to bless Pat, because in fact I might have been giving it to somebody who didn't actually want a cake because they might have been slimming or whatever, and I wouldn't bothered about that. I just wanted the excuse to go round and unload myself. Can you see what I'm saying? Sometimes we do things that we think are good, and actually our motives are quite selfish. We haven't actually thought, oh, I'm going to be selfish and make a cake. But underneath, that's what's going on. So that's quite subtle, but we do these things all the time without realizing that's what we're doing. And we're doing things to satisfy ourselves sometimes, good things, but to satisfy ourselves, to make us feel good, or to make other people think we're good, which makes us feel good, rather than actually doing what God wants to do. We're sort of performing. We don't even realize it sometimes. So what do we do? Do we do nothing? No, we don't do nothing, because Jesus says, I want you to be doers of the word, not just hearers. You do need to do things. But why? What should our motivation be? We should be doing it because his love is in us. Okay, and we're looking at people in the way that God looks at people. We're loving God so much, we're saying, God, I want to see people in the way that you see them. You know all about them and you really love them. And I want to love them in the way that you love them. I want to see what it is that you want to do for that person so I can bless them in an appropriate way. I want the motivation to be right. I want to do it for you and for them. I want to try and cut out me. I want it to flow from who you've made me to be. I want it to flow from being and not from me. Does that make sense? Wave your hand if it... It's quite subtle, really, because it says in the Bible, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. I remember that's one of the verses I had to, I learned as a child, desperately wicked. But it's true, we don't understand how sinful we are. And the more that we look into ourselves, the more we realise, oh, I've got ulterior motives here, I've got ulterior motives there, that we aren't aware of. But the closer we get to God, the more we realise, actually, he's so much better than us. And we start to realise that we're not as good as we thought we were. It's one of these sort of, I would say it's an oxymoron, which you don't know. It means it's an opposite to what it seems. The closer we get to God, the more we seem to notice our own sinfulness, which doesn't seem to make sense. But it's the more we're aware of God's purity and his selflessness that we realise that we're actually selfish creatures. And in as much as we don't put all our trust in God, we put it in other things. We are relying on ourselves. So it's difficult to live the Christian life the way it should be lived. But it's worth it. He wants us to walk with him and talk with him. And to go around like Jesus did, seeing what God was doing. That's what it says. Jesus said, I don't do anything except what the Father's already doing. I realised this yesterday because a situation came about and I thought, how is it that these godly people, you know, that they tell you all these stories of how they witnessed to this person and that person, they sit next to somebody on the train just wanting to become a Christian, or they, you know, they're always having these wonderful conversations. How is it? Because it doesn't happen to me. And I thought, the reason it doesn't happen to you, Katie, is that you don't want it to happen to you. Actually. Because it's a bit vulnerable, talking to strangers, isn't it? And I realised, well, the more that you want that to happen, the more God will put people in your path. It's not that he gives all these special people that are just ready to, you know, do something marvellous in their lives to just these special saints. Now, he wants to do it with all of us. He wants to work through all of us. But he actually knows our heart and he knows who will be obedient to him. And some of these people that have all these stories, it's because they've been obedient to him. And Katie, he hasn't been giving you those opportunities because he knew what you'd do. You'd run a mile. That's why he's not been giving you the opportunities. You didn't really want them. Oh, you might have said you wanted them, but you didn't really deep down want to be vulnerable. And have to trust in God. And just let's have a time of quiet as we sort of reflect on that and ask God to change our hearts, that we actually really do want him to work in us, because there are so many hurting people around. And he wants to use each one of us. And we're all different. And people that Michelle can reach, that Maureen can reach, aren't the people that I can reach, or the people Jack can reach. That's why he's got all different people. He's chosen us. Because we are special. And we are just the people that can relate to the people that he'll put in front of us. Trust him to do it.